Large segments of people who live off-grid have variable incomes and they struggle to pay their energy bills. Mobile Power, which is actually a pay-per-use battery sharing network, had to build a technology company and redesign the batteries they wanted to use to enable a business model that works across Africa, which is based on the customer's need. ESI Africa talks to Luke Burris, one of the co-founders of Mobile Power, about affordable access to energy.
Welcome to the ESI Africa podcast, brought to you by your trusted power and energy multimedia journal. You can download this and all other episodes on esi-africa.com/podcasts. Let's get into today's conversation.
Hello, Luke, and welcome to the ESI Africa podcast.
Hi, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's start off with a brief introduction to Mobile Power. If I understand correctly, you co-founded the company around the idea of solar-powered mobile power. So it's a pay-per-swap battery. So tell us about the tech that lies at the heart of this company.
I have to confess, I'm what we call a late co-founder. So there are four co-founders, three of whom were much more risky than I, and one of whom had the idea. Once it was kind of working, I kind of jumped ship from my normal job and came across. So I have to confess that, you know, there are some more risky people in the company. But yeah, I suppose the central innovation at Mobile Power is a realization of how customers work. So back in the day when solar home systems were really getting a lot of traction in sub-Saharan Africa, so this is the idea where a customer can basically gradually over a couple of years buy their own generation asset and sit out in their house. It was absolutely sweeping the continent by storm because people for the first time could get affordable access to energy. But what we saw was a large segment of the 600, 800 million people who live off grid actually can't afford daily payments. Their income is very variable over the year and they certainly can't afford deposits. So we saw customers who were buying one serving sachets of washing powder rather than paying actually a lower cost per kilo for a large tub. And the reason they do that is they have to manage their cash flow very carefully on a daily basis. 93% of our customers are below the extreme poverty line. And that means on a daily basis, they've got about $1.93 to afford everything. And at the top of those people's lists is usually food, education, healthcare is somewhere, washing is actually quite high up the list. And somewhere down towards, you know, at least beyond fifth, maybe 10th in some households is energy access. And those customers are using what's left over on a day to buy their energy. So we knew we needed to design a business model that could serve those customers on a daily basis without a deposit, without debt over a couple of years. And we needed to run it as a business. So we needed to find an operating dynamic that allowed us to make money and also the customer to get an excellent service. So all of that landed us in the space of battery rental. We thought, how hard can it be? It turns out it's really, really difficult. We had to build a technology company in order to just get the technology that we required. We had to patent elements of the business model from a technology perspective. We had to pretty much redesign the way in which lithium-ion batteries switch on and switch off, separate charging circuitry. So for those of you who've got video, behind me is what we affectionately call the geeks. And these guys are just very good at battery technology, firmware, software, fintech. And we've joined that all together in a business model that is operated across the continent now. And it's really the collaboration of that customer insight, the ability to put technology into drive that customer insight, and then capital and operating capacity to go and execute against that. That's kind of what makes Mobile Power so successful. It starts with the customer and works through the technology from there.
So in what territory are you rolling out at the moment and where are you expanding to?
Yeah, so this all started for us back in 2015, really. We did some pilots in the Gambia. And then in 2016, we had our first successful pilot with our own technology running from our own hubs in a town called Pepana in the middle of Sierra Leone. And we've grown the business from there. It took us a long time to get the manufacturing established and set up at scale. Unit cost was really important for us. So we've invested heavily in building our own supply chain in China. And we have regular operations there. In fact, in the UK office here, we have some Chinese team who operate on Shenzhen time with Shenzhen accents, and there's lots of Mandarin and Cantonese being spoken around the office. And then in 2019, we hit on very positive unit economics. So really technology and then combining that with operational experience on the ground out there in Sierra Leone. We now have a large Sierra Leonean team operating that business. We're in pretty much every big town in Sierra Leone, including the capital city. So from there, once we started realizing positive unit economics at a whole country level, we really said, okay, this is ready to scale. And one of the great things about Sierra Leone is it's very much a frontier market. I think if you can make something that works for customers in Sierra Leone and the technology can function in the infrastructure environment of Sierra Leone, you can do that across a lot of the continent in sub-Saharan Africa. We moved into Liberia next. It's different, but also quite similar in lots of ways as well. So we were able to operate there quite quickly using Sierra Leonean team to train up local Liberian staff. And we've really been very successful in Liberia. That's been a fantastic market for us. We're looking forward to expanding there even further over the next year. And then Liberia and Sierra Leone, very much home for us, but both relatively small countries compared to some on the continent. So we chose the largest one we could, which is Nigeria. Nigeria has over 200 million people. I think it might be 210 at the moment. And roughly half of those, just under half of those, are living off-grid. So you've got a market of 100 million people a very exciting place to expand. Nigeria's just become our largest market. It's overtaken Sierra Leone recently. We're gaining about 1,000 customers a week in Nigeria at the moment, launching 2 new locations every week, hiring a new agent more than once a day. So that's very exciting for us. But we also wanted to go further, and the next largest market that we could see in terms of off-grid population was the DRC. We've recently launched an entity in the DRC, and we've got some guys working very hard on getting started there. We should be starting to get our first customers towards the back end of this year. And again, we'll expand very quickly in Western DRC over the next couple of years.
Now, if I understand this correctly, you offer 3 different services. So how does that work? And then where do you actually offer which service?
Great question. So Mopo 50, which is our smallest battery, is our largest piece of the business at this point. We rent about 500,000 batteries a month to customers right across the continent. So that's been very successful, very profitable for us now. And what we realized about 3 years ago as we were really hitting on positive unit economics is here in the UK, we've developed a lot of technology expertise. And then in sub-Saharan Africa, we built some fantastic teams, which were entirely local. And we didn't have any British accents kicking around. And we said, actually, we've hit on something really powerful here. The ability to raise capital in European markets where, for whatever reason, it's easier in general. The ability to develop technology in the UK using some of the best organizations in the world, including the University of Sheffield and Energy Catalyst, Carbon Trust. And then the ability to work with our Chinese organization to get the supply chain organized. And we said, hang on, we've got to build something else. We've got to take this further. We've got to stretch the advantage further. So we said, what's the next great challenge for the continent? We see that petrol, whilst being exceedingly powerful, is also quite difficult for a lot of sub-Saharan African economies. A lot of the governments are spending billions and billions of dollars every year subsidizing fuel in order to make the economies function well. And in some of those economies, you know, you're looking at eye-watering amounts where governments are spending more on petrol than they're spending on education, more on petrol than they're spending on military. And these are countries that have real security issues. So we realized that if we could unlock sunshine as the core form of energy for a lot of sub-Saharan African countries, we could dramatically change the way in which people live. So that's what we set about doing. We set about developing a product called the Mopo Max, which is a much larger battery. It's a 1 kilowatt hour battery. And the Moco Max runs in our e-mobility platform, both electric motorbikes and tuk-tuks. We're vehicle agnostic, so we can work with anybody's vehicles. Part of the great thing about having such great geeks in the company is we've been able to develop a battery that can operate at several voltage and power profiles, and in firmware, at the point of rental, we can adjust that for different bikes and tuk-tuks and agricultural vehicles, water pumps. That same Moco Max battery also gets rented to lower middle income households. So the classic example would be somebody who drives your Uber or your Bolt in Lagos. Generally, those kind of customers are running a small generator between 0 and 5 kilowatt peak in the evening. But the majority of the fuel that they're using and burning isn't actually going into useful things like running their fridge or turning their lights on or charging their phone. Most of it is literally going up in smoke. And what we found is there's a very powerful report published by A2EI and Dalberg that showed that a lot of those consumers are actually using a relatively small amount of energy to get some very powerful services. So we've been replacing those petrol generators and replacing that guy's daily trip to the petrol station with a daily trip to a Mopo, solar-powered Mopo hub, where they're able to rent a battery that will run AC appliances like fridges and freezers. And it's the same battery that runs the motorbike taxis, the motorbike tuk-tuks. So we really are taking petrol and replacing it with sunshine. So it's a very exciting journey, and that's really, really what I think I'll spend my next decade doing, at least.
So now your business also incorporates an app and a mobile power platform that the agents actually use, and it appears to be decentralized and it can work offline. So was that the aim right from the beginning to have that kind of firmware, or did that come about organically as the business progressed?
Great question. I think the short answer is no, it was an absolute non-negotiable from the start. All of the best entrepreneurs I've ever met are sub-Saharan African. I think there's something about the environment, something about the way in which people learn how to do things that just makes people excellent at entrepreneurial skills. And what we've always wanted to do was take technology that's available to us here in the UK, capital that's available often to Western entrepreneurs and access to supply chain, and really put that in the hands of the most powerful entrepreneurs we've ever met. Our app enables us to do that on a micro level right across the continent. And when you look at a lot of last mile distribution businesses, the most tricky part of that is, believe it or not, managing the last mile. And I think our app, our platform, and when you combine that with the hardware, allows us to work with those local entrepreneurs and empower them to run their own businesses. And I'll be honest, we make money from doing so by those partnerships. But it's really the app partnered with the charging infrastructure and access to capital, access to technology, access to supply chain. There is the powerful element about mobile power and does enable us to kickstart local economies. And we do it in partnership with local entrepreneurs. Very proud of the fact that in each of the countries, there aren't any expats. You know, we've trained local guys to do installs. We've trained local guys to be the agents. We've trained local guys to operate at the finance level at local as well. So it's been really powerful. 37% of our local agents are female. A lot of those ladies have never had jobs before in informal markets, and we've had to work very hard at making sure that works with local societies, but we're exceedingly proud of that. And there's some amazing stories coming out. All of that is possible because of the app platform that allows us to scale that with low management overheads. And like I said, we're hiring more than one agent every day. That's enabled by our app platform.
Now, I think you've actually, in a way, answered this, the role of local partners in developing and scaling up the power hubs. It seems to be a very big deal for you.
It's absolutely crucial. I mean, we each play a part in mobile power's business. And, you know, I'm on this podcast and talking a lot of rubbish most of the time. But the guys who are really doing the real stuff out there on the ground are the agents who are dealing with our customers on a daily basis. And then their area managers who are working with those agents to make sure the customers get a consistent basis. And then there's country directors who are making sure the company's able to operate and working with our local government partners on the ground, our local funding partners on the ground. Really, I'm just part of the enabling environment here back in the UK. I think we're able to redress a lot of the advantages that we have in the West and put those into sub-Saharan African markets. And we're very committed to that. But yes, it's all about enabling a local entrepreneur. Without those guys, we're just some interesting circuit boards.
So you mentioned also the idea of last mile delivery. Is that actually how you see your business? Is that where you actually categorize it rather than we are a creator of a battery?
Sound like one of our investors. The question we get asked most is, where do you categorize yourself? And I think it's a very difficult question to answer. We're effectively completely changing the paradigm in which energy works. We're changing the paradigm in which local entrepreneurs are able to access the rest of the world. You know, if you've been one of my customers, Teresa, for a couple of years, I'd have an awful lot of data about you, and I'd be able to bring you powerful solutions as a result of that data. So are we last mile distribution? Yes. Are we a technology company? Yes. Are we an IP company? Absolutely. Are we a Chinese supply chain company? Yes. Are we working with motorbikes from all across Asia? Yes. So it's very difficult because I think we've been so customer-led that actually we built up from there and then just built whatever infrastructure we needed to do that. Are we a C&I install solar company? Yeah, we're installing multiple megawatts of solar across the continent at an absolute rate of knots. So it's very difficult to categorize mobile power, but last mile is a crucial part of this business. The majority of the 600 million people who don't have reliable access to energy and growing are in rural areas, or they're in peri-urban areas, or they're in urban areas that don't have access to traditional infrastructure, including roads. So you've got to be able to operate at the last mile, and you have to be able to do that powerfully and reliably. So yeah, it's a crucial part of our business, but it's one spoke of what we see as a paradigm shift.
So what are some of the challenges you've faced in rolling out the hubs, especially since they are across different countries where conditions are different and people are different and they understand things in different ways? And have you been able to apply what you've learned in one space to another space?
At my level here in the UK, it feels like it works everywhere. But I think the reality of that is because we partner with local guys through the business, actually it's the local guys who adapt our business to the local context. So, you know, we have lots of hubs all over the continent. And I think if you were to go to any one of those hubs, you'd see a slightly different operating model at each one of those locations. Some agents are riding around on motorbikes because it's a very rural, spread out area, and they're taking batteries for their customers on their bikes. At the other end extreme, some agents just stay in the hub all day and there's a queue outside their hub and they're renting to batteries to customers directly. So we see the kind of local agent part of the business, and what those guys are able to do is adopt that to local context. We're operating in urban environments as well, which again you'd imagine would be entirely different. You operate with those local agents and they work out how to do it. I think some of the big changes that we'll see across the continent in the next decade are to do with the price of fuel. So Liberia at one point had the most expensive fuel on the planet. We're also operating in Nigeria, where fuel is some of the cheapest on the planet. That creates very different dynamics for us and different dynamics as to which services will work in the right place. And I think we'll see that shift over the next decade as sunshine becomes the alternative and most powerful energy provider to a lot of these sub-Saharan African countries.
It's interesting talking about price of fuel, because I've just written a story about what happened in Ukraine and it being invaded by Russia, how that changed the price of oil and how that affects then energy security of countries throughout the world, and how that's going to change going forward what the energy systems will be like. And then you're talking about price of fuel from a completely different point of view, but just as relevant and important.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in this business because I'm very excited about the transition that the world's going to go on. A lot of sub-Saharan Africa is not about transition. It's just about getting on the energy ladder for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's genuinely exciting about sub-Saharan Africa. Here in the UK, there's lots of discussion about energy prices. And there's lots of discussion about how that affects the economy. And in some ways, that creates an opportunity for a transition to renewable energy. But in sub-Saharan Africa, you can do that from day one. And so we're able to provide our customers with cheaper energy than they've ever had before. We're able to provide motorbike riders with cheaper access to energy than they've ever had before. And that's because you're building something from scratch the right way. You know, I often talk about Western power grids. We wouldn't build them in the way that they're built nowadays, with big power stations out in the middle of nowhere that transport AC current to places. Actually, we'd have a totally different way of doing power. We'd have micro power stations on everybody's houses, sharing between neighbors. These kind of micro grid organizations with batteries at their center is very much what we do. We have the opportunity, and indeed we're executing on it in sub-Saharan Africa, to do so and build grid and energy distribution systems that are suited to sunshine rather than fossil fuels. And I think that's exceedingly exciting for sub-Saharan Africa. You know, our riders are no longer exposed to fluctuating prices of petrol. They're no longer queuing at petrol stations that have not enough fuel, because the sunshine is available readily, and we've found a way of packaging it up and making it useful across transport and household energy. And it looks entirely different. And my challenge, I think, to us as a planet is, let's not do things the way they've always been done. And I'm very excited about the opportunity that Africa has to lead the way in showing that.
So now, Mobile Power is one of the companies I came to because of Energy Catalyst, and you've received support from them. So in what way has it been? Financial advisory? How are they working with you?
Yes, all of the above. So Mobile Power, obviously very innovative in terms of technology and business models. And Energy Catalyst have been exceedingly helpful to us all the way through building our organization. And the wider Innovate UK, and of course the British government as well, has been exceedingly supportive of both the development outcomes that Mobile Power has, as well as the technology and employment opportunities. So yeah, capital with crazy early ideas that you just need a grant to get off the ground. Capital to go and scale those with grant, help with working with equity investors. Being on this podcast and getting to talk to you and your listeners, Teresa, is something that Carbon Trust and Energy Catalyst brought to us as an opportunity yesterday. Flying us out to conferences, giving us a platform to speak, helping us do all those sorts of things. So they've been exceedingly helpful with getting the word out there about Mobile Power. I'm absolutely sure we wouldn't be where we are today without them.
So in terms of future plans and ambitions for Mobile Power, do you want to take over the world, or what is it that you actually want to be doing?
We really want to empower people who, like I said, are some of the best entrepreneurs on the planet to be able to scale that entrepreneurial skill, to be able to move up the energy ladder, to be able to get access to technology and capital that previously was just too risky to put into these geographies. And I think we've proven that on a small scale so far. I'm in for at least the next decade to seeing what we can do with that and go all the way. Energy is a great place to start. As we've seen in I'm sure the article you wrote about the fluctuating prices of fuel across the world, it completely transforms economies, even a small fluctuation in the price of a fossil fuel. But from there, you know, what makes business go around is money a lot of the time, access to capital, making sure that capital gets put in the hands of the most powerful entrepreneurs to be able to change a market. And we have rich customer data. We have rich agent data. And I think I'm very excited about bringing people into a world where we can put capital out there. We're very excited about the opportunities to redesign and rethink the ways in which grid networks, transport networks are built up. I think there are a lot of very powerful players in sub-Saharan Africa with e-mobility. We're looking forward to partnering with those guys. And indeed, more countries. You know, we're operating in 7, nearly 8 countries now, but I think there's a lot of places we could go with this. I'm hoping we don't have to come to South Africa. I'm hoping that you guys continue to move forward with your energy needs, but there are certainly other places where I think there's work to be done.
Well, if you're moving into the smarter mobility space, that is something that, you know, we would love to actually get going here in South Africa. So you might actually be coming to my neck of the woods at some point.
Very good. Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think e-mobility for us is a powerful tool. Electric motorbikes and tuk-tuks are very exciting, but mostly as a medium. I think what we're very excited about is taking sunshine, making it into electricity, and then making that into useful work. Our network of battery swap hubs that are entirely solar powered are going to be very transforming for economies, very transforming for the planet, very transforming for the way we think. And that's where mobile power is very focused.
Yeah, I think you need to come this way. We need it. Thank you so much for making the time to speak to us. I look forward to finding out what mobile power is going to be doing next.
You have been listening to an ESI Africa podcast. For the latest news, reports, and interviews on power, energy, and related industries, visit the ESI Africa website on esi-africa.com or follow us on social media. Until next time, thank you for tuning in.